This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex is the premier provider of managed and in-house servicing in the biddable media space. If you're looking for true transparency with paid social, PPC, or programmatic, or are a brand or agency looking into in-housing your team, connect with Uconnex today. Visit them at uconnex.com. And Tumi. Tumi provides luxury without limits. I've got the bag. I've got the backpack. If you're a business traveler, nothing lets you roll in style like Tumi. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are incredibly proud to make a contribution to No Kid Hungry in the name of each of our 2019 guests. Stop by NoKidHungry.org today to contribute and help kids be kids, not be hungry.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter, and with me right now, it's Jackson Jayanagam. Did I pronounce that right,
That's
Jackson?
Pretty good.
Dang straight. Look at that. I hit right then on that the first time. Jackson is currently the vice president and general manager of the Nutrinext direct-to-consumer business at the Clorox Company. So I can basically say you're a GM at Clorox.
Correct.
Close?
Correct.
Perfect. Well, listen, Jackson, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
We're in New York this week. We're calling this Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Week because I've just been talking to people that are kind of all in that space. I'm not sure where Clorox will fit along the way, but I'm sure we'll wedge that in there somewhere. So are you living here in the city?
Yes, I am. For about another month. Been here for about 12 years and we're moving in May.
And so are you moving in May for the job itself?
We are, yeah.
And where are you going to be moving to?
DC.
Have you traveled there much? I'm assuming at this point now.
Yeah, man. I've been like a consultant on the road week after week, much to my wife's chagrin. She's 9.5 months pregnant and we have a 3.5-year-old at home. So she's been...
Jackson, what is wrong with you?
I know.
What in the world is wrong with you? Dear Lord.
She's been a soldier. But I'm done traveling because now I'm grounded and we have 2 weeks for due date and then we move 2 weeks after.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So you already have a 3.5-year-old?
3.5-year-old at home.
And you're getting ready to have another child?
That's right.
Boy, girl?
Another girl.
So you'll have two daughters?
I will.
Still going to try for another son in there somewhere? You stick with the two that you got?
We've talked about it. But, you know, even if I had a third girl, we'd be happy. You know,
absolutely.
Healthy, and happy.
Healthy is the most important thing.
But a boy would be cool.
Hey, I've got a son who's 15. I'll loan you him anytime you want, Jackson. So let's jump right into it. You know, we appreciate you joining us on the show. Your title certainly was an interesting one to me and your journey was interesting as well. That's one of the great things about podcasting is the fact that you can have all these different people that their titles fall under marketing, but they do all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. So where did you grow up?
I was born in Sri Lanka amongst a war, a conflict within the region. So if you know much about the history there, it's a big civil war.
My son knows all of it.
I know
some of it.
Okay,
He's a total history, knows every state flag, all that stuff,
yes.
Soaks that kind of stuff up.
Okay, so he probably knows, but it was a conflicted region for decades. And then my parents left because they didn't want to raise me there, moved to Southern Virginia. My dad went to Virginia Tech.
From Sri Lanka to Southern Virginia?
I know, right?
Wow.
And I was raised there until we got booted from the country due to immigration laws. So he was on a scholarship. It was the late 80s, early 90s. Not as open-minded and as liberal maybe as it is now or has been in the last few.
Well, it's come a little full circle, unfortunately,
sure.
For all of us. We'll see where that ends up, though,
yeah.
Jackson. So how old were you when you guys moved back out of the U.S.?
I was 13, so a critical area, just a little bit younger than your son. Was either go back to Sri Lanka for 2 years and come back as rules of the scholarship, which is not an option, or go leave the country anywhere. So we went to Vancouver, Canada. And the irony is my dad does water treatment. His job, sole job, is to clean up drinking water around the world, particularly focused in the U.S. So a pretty good job to have in terms of giving back. But in that time, I don't think people really thought about clean drinking water like they do now.
That part's not changing, at least. We hope not.
Yeah,
for a little while.
I mean, knock on wood, right?
Yeah.
So we went to Vancouver.
Well, Vancouver's an incredible city.
Yeah, and it went through a lot of change after we left. But yeah, I mean, we were seeing the change kind of happen.
Yeah.
Beautiful city. I don't know if I appreciated it at 14, but it is
my
beautiful.
Son appreciates it now because he loves Vancouver. He loves Canada.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I didn't mean to make this turn into an episode about my son, Jackson, but apparently he's the son you don't have. So
yeah, right.
We'll send him your direction. So you ended up in Vancouver at 13.
Yeah.
Have you been back to Sri Lanka?
6 times.
So you still have family there to some extent?
I have my grandma, who's about 96, and my uncle, who takes care of her.
96?
Yeah, so we took our one-year-old daughter there, which was not fun, across from New York. I think we stopped in Abu Dhabi and then to Sri Lanka, about 22-hour total flight time. But we wanted her to meet her just in case.
Certainly at that age, you want to make sure that there's a chance for everybody to feel like they've made that touch.
Exactly.
So that whatever happens to us after this, there's a connection
exactly.
To some extent.
But she's alive and kicking, so there might be a chance for a second visit with this new one.
You said she's 97?
It will be 97 this year.
I cannot imagine. I am, how old am I, Philip? 45? I'm 49. I can't imagine
Are
that
you 49?
There's-
Wow.
What do I look, 55?
No, dude. I was
whatever,
say,
dude. Whatever, Jackson.
I was say, like, uh-huh. Oh, look at all the gray hair I have.
Sure,
man.
Sure.
I'm not
sure,
one to
sure,
be
sure.
Speaking.
Could you imagine there's more than half of this life left? I don't know. You hope so, I guess. That's craziness at 97. So, how did you get into marketing in the first place?
Man, I fell into it. Probably like a lot of people, I feel like, right? Went to University of Oregon. They took me, so I went there, and I loved it. It was fun. I wanted to be a psych major, and then I'm at my first stats class. I'm like, nope, not going to happen. Then, ironically enough, I do a lot of stats now, but then I went to English. There was a lot of reading, so bailed on that, and then I went into sociology. I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's a lot of talking.
Something
I like to
stuck.
Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up majoring in race relations, which was really cool. I'm passionate about it, especially as like a one-and-a-half generation immigrant, you know, coming over here after being born somewhere else, but being one. There's a whole segment of us there, but there's not many jobs there. And I had no intention of being a teacher or a professor. So my buddy was like, hey, you like throwing parties? I was in a fraternity, I threw some parties. I'm like, yeah, who doesn't? He's like, hey, you should get into PR. That's what they do. I'm like, really? Great. I'll get into PR. I found a job, paid $22,000 a year in Portland.
Count me in.
I was all about it. And I moved my buddy into a shitty, oh, can I say shitty?
You can say whatever you okay. want.
A shitty apartment.
They'll clean it up or they won't.
Okay.
We'll see if it sneaks by.
Nice thing about podcast. So I fell into his tech PR. And man, I'll tell you, Sean, my first 2 years, I didn't throw one party. I mean,
so much work.
I mean, through parties with my friends, but at work, yeah, it was like, this is like 2000. So I was faxing press releases.
They told you were going to be at parties and you're doing faxes.
And it was tech PR. My client was Microsoft. I mean, they were cool clients, but like there was nothing fun or sexy about it. And what I've learned about myself is I'm not a good entry level employee. I'm just not. I'm a horrible entry level. It took me like 5 years to get promoted. Everyone else around me was getting promoted left and right. I did not do well with authority. I did not do well by the guidelines and the books and
you
check marks.
You should not be here.
Yeah, dude. I was much rather like, when can I skip to being a CMO or a VP? Like, that was my mindset.
So. Raise the hand. Like, can I just skip all the rest of these?
Yeah, like, do I need this? Yeah, it's like taking a math class in high school. Do I really need this? Do I need to understand this? Which apparently you do. So
they tell me, I don't know. I'm still learning.
Me too. So I did that for a few years. And then I was in agency world for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then finally I threw a party.
And that's where your life changed.
It was over, man. I went to T-Mobile. There was my client, moved to Seattle. I launched all the Sidekicks. And Sidekicks had a big influencer celebrity buzz to it, but it was a small team and very tight budget. So they're like, hey, what can we do? We can't do TV ads. So what can we do? And it was a lot around influencers, PR, events. So I was doing all these cool up and coming events. They weren't huge parties, but I got my blood flowing on that one. And then that was it. I kind of stuck with PR. And then I fell into social media through that. Paris Hilton Sidekick got hacked. I was dealing with that crisis on a Sunday night with the CEO of T-Mobile, which was interesting. And then this whole digital marketing thing kind of blew up. I was launching on MySpace. I was launching them on Wikipedia, on Twitter. I'm like, I think this social media stuff is pretty cool.
I know we've got you for a limited time, but
it's all good.
What's interesting about what you just said, as I said, this is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Week. And so here's how I'm going to put my button on it. I love music. Oh, I can't say that I love drugs and sex. I don't think I'm allowed to say that, but we'll skip past those other two. But a buddy of mine who worked for Bell South at the time, which was AT&T, he was in the space where he would always get the new phones before they were like out launched in the market.
Oh, yeah.
TJ. So he would always call me, and I worked in radio, and he'd be like, I got this new phone and you got to come see it. And, you know, he'd get it 6 months before it would actually hit the market, or some of them never actually hit the market. Yep. But I remember he got this one. He's like, you can play music on this. I was like, what? And so we came over, I remember I got in my car, I drove over there. He's like, yeah, I think you had like, you know, you had to put like something in it or whatever.
Sure.
Or there was like 10 songs available total.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how sometimes all those pieces still pull together. They still all are intertwined. And so to your point with Sidekick and Paris Hilton and all that, our phones, once that technology started, it really, everything still,
extension
still ties
of you, right?
To
it still is. Yeah, definitely. At that time, it was such change innovation. It's pre-iPhone, right?
Now it's probably more.
You know, I would argue, yeah, it's definitely more. Different,
too
but
much,
more.
But yeah,
then it was really about style. Remember the Motorola Razr, Pebble? So it was a lot about the look.
I had a Palm Trio. I was one of the first.
Oh, Palm Trio, wow.
Those crazy things.
You
are. Listen, I'm dated,
throwback,
bro.
Man.
I'm a throwback. I'm a classic.
That's cool.
They call me vintage, my friend. They call me vintage. So you ended up there,
yep.
And then you ended up at Boxed at some point as
yeah.
well.
So I made the jump to New York. I went to a small influencer marketing agency to work on CPG because I'd done tech forever. I was lucky enough to fall into the Old Spice account and Dentine, where I did some cool stuff with Dentine and Sour Patch Kids. It's all part of Cadbury at the time. But Old Spice was great because before that campaign, if you remember, which you and I do, maybe your son doesn't, Old Spice was your dad, maybe granddad's cologne, and they didn't even make cologne. It was just such an archaic brand. Even though it was like number two or number three in the market for APDO, then Wieden came up with an amazing creative, did a second two creatives around it, the TV spots, and then the videos, the 225 videos in 2 days, which my team was a part of.
Oh, that's interesting.
We just did the social piece, so we're monitoring social media, identifying conversations, handling some of the crises that came about.
Did you say that was a Wieden and Kennedy campaign?
Yeah, their strategy, their creative. We just executed the social with them.
It is amazing in today's world where everybody is a marketer. Everybody feels like they know how to create content and change a brand out there. There's still a lot to be said for great content.
Yeah,
just great content. I mean, to your point, you have this legacy brand that nobody was doing much, you know, with, and you can make something old new again. And certainly if you have great contemporary creative.
Well,
you can,
and they were interesting because everyone thinks that they were trying to combat Axe at the time, and even Tag, which was actually owned by P&G, if I remember correctly. But Axe was not the concern. It was Dove had done the Real Beauty campaign. They were launching Men Plus Care. Most of the decisions on deodorant in the household were made by the women in the household. So if they've won them with Dove women, you would assume that when Men Plus Care, oh, sure, I'll just drop that in my basket, right? And now I think more guys, especially kids, are making more choices and asking their parents, is what I want. But still, a large part of that decision making is the mom or even dad now.
So something ends up actually being defensive play.
For sure.
From great creative.
And that was one. Everyone thought it was Axe. It was not. So amazing experience for me, Sean. I loved it. Again, that's when I really solidified my digital marketing love, even though it was like a PR influencer thing. And then I went to another agency for 5 more years to launch their digital marketing practice with Diageo, Jordan Brand, Starwood, just now broadened out my horizon of capabilities of clients. And then I went to Chipotle after that, and they hired me to head up digital marketing, so run all the digital, establish some digital first precedence, because Chipotle is a great marketing company in the restaurants with their great 3-minute content that everyone knows about, but they weren't great on social, they weren't great on day-to-day, they weren't great on direct response, so they need someone for the foundation, like the analytics, the content on social, they weren't strong there. And then 6 months later, the food crisis hit. So I had another crisis, but a crisis on a whole different level, because it was all through social and I ran social. And I spent another year after that just combating it. So all my plans to do these great things like loyalty program, which they just launched, the CRM, analytics.
You had to scrap it all and kind of figure out how to go back into it.
Get people back in the store. That's all that matters. So then became a direct response driven company, which is great for me because it kind of put me here. I had to learn performance marketing, which now every marketer should know. But back then, only like...
Direct marketer was a bad word.
Yeah. And if you're AT&T or Verizon or Nike, you didn't give a crap about performance. You were like TV ad impressions, you know, like that's really what you were thinking.
Somebody was saying to me earlier that there's kind of two marketers to some extent, and maybe it's not fair to put everybody in a box, but they were saying there's poets and plumbers. So the poets are the writers, the plumbers are the ones who have to kind of connect all the parts or pieces together. And I guess there's, you know, there's little bits of some that you can cover both. But the plumbing part is an important part because to your point, certainly now, direct-to-consumer is every brand needs to have a direct-to-consumer strategy to some extent.
Yeah.
And so was your time through that and then your time at Box, is that what eventually led you to this position that you've just taken with Clorox?
Yeah, so being CMO at Box is an amazing experience. Great team, great founders, love the vision. I just felt like I needed something a little different and I was struggling. And I was, when I was looking, there was a lot. It's a great, good market right now as marketers, right? As you probably know and many of your listeners know. Who knows? Hopefully it'll stay like that if there's a recession, right? I don't know. But a lot of great startups out there. I was like, oh, I could do another startup. And I love startup life, but I just wasn't feeling that fire that I had at Chipotle and Box when I first started. Then I spoke to some people and I started reading all these articles about the CMO track. And I talked to a lot of recruiters like Spencer Stewart and Boyden and Korn Ferry about like, where does...
Are those all recruiting companies?
Yeah.
They don't call me. They don't call you, Jackson. Well, I'll write those names down. Make an intro.
They probably don't think they can poach
this
you.
This entrepreneur thing's getting a little old. I'm getting a little old.
They should consult with you though.
They should. So you talk to them for a bit and each of those was kind of helping giving you some guidance.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I could just be another CMO. I didn't have the scale to be a CMO of a Fortune 100 company, right? I needed probably another role or two. I could go do another...
What did you call it?
A role or two.
Another role, yeah.
Yeah. I could have done... What did you think I said?
I didn't know if you said roller, so I wasn't sure what you're saying is you needed to build out that resume perhaps a little bit more, just give yourself an additional leg underneath where you've been.
Yeah, that's exactly what they said. It's like, if you want to go be a CMO of Fortune 100, you need just another level, like your scale isn't there. However, some of the larger CMO roles at some of the larger startups, like the Airbnbs and Ubers of the world, they wanted someone who had a little bit more scale as well, maybe not as much as like a Nike, but they were like, hey, we're about to go IPO, or you know, so... I found myself a little bit niched into the same kind of startup size. And I was like, you know, I just don't know if I even want to be a CMO of a big or small company. And these recruiters and a lot of consultants and people I've chatted with said, you know, a lot of marketers are making that path into CEO and president track, but you need a GM type role. You need to have that full P&L responsibility, profit and loss, which I didn't have. I was always a cost center. I was always going to my CFO saying, I need more money to drive growth. I'm a growth guy. I'll drive top line. I wasn't thinking about margin. I wasn't thinking about technology, data science. Like I kind of thought about, but not owning it. Analytics and so forth, R&D, innovation. And Clorox is one of the best, right? Forbes just wrote that article about the companies that train marketers to be CEOs, and they were number six. And the top five are companies that are 3 or 4x their size. So to me, and they were like 22 5 years ago when they did the survey. So that was a really good sign. Well-run company, great people. And I was, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll is actually a supplements company. So I guess you get your drugs in there, right?
There you go.
Some form, fashion. They say, hey, we need someone to run this startup that we acquired as part of a bigger acquisition. It's all D2C. It kind of runs independently. Yes, it is part of Nutrinex, which is part of Clorox now, but we need a D2C marketer. We don't really have those here. We're looking for someone exactly like you.
So your background really aligned with the need for that. And
yeah,
it fit almost perfectly to your point.
Yeah. And then the one thing I miss, I don't get the upside, right? As you would at a startup. But what I do is I don't have to fundraise. I don't have to worry about backing and always on the road. Like we're at Box constantly fundraising. That's just the startup life, right? And most importantly, I got now to learn. I think every job you should go into, even as a CMO or C-suite, you should know 70% of it and learn 30% of it. And this was one where it was probably like 60-40, where I was learning about running a P&L. I was learning about running tech, running product.
I can tell you about running a P&L, and it's painful. It's painful, but it's, to your point, it's the full funnel to some extent. It does allow you at least the chance to be able to raise a hand if and when that opportunity comes up, or you may end up staying in this role certainly for a great length of time.
That's right.
It's that GM title that I feel like I'm spending some time talking and having more of those people on the show this season than I've probably have ever before.
Oh, interesting.
But it's an interesting title because they're out there, but it's a title that a lot of CMOs are starting to kind of transition to some extent. So to your point, they can kind of round out their service suite.
And give yourself options. You could take on a president role. You could take on another GM role. You could still go back to being a CMO. Now you know the numbers and you really understand what goes into it. You're just that much better off. And again, to my earlier point about math in college, I like quick math. I'm good at quick math, but anything beyond that, I kind of shied away from. And I think everyone should really push and challenge themselves. I could easily go to where I love and what I know, which is digital marketing. And I'm taking that, but now I'm like, okay, I got to force myself to learn other things because I do not want to be at a certain point in my age or in my career where like now I'm like struggling.
Where you're my age and you're sitting in the back of the cube smoking a cigarette, talking about how great life used to be. You know, I was an early digital marketer. I was a social influencer.
Yeah, and no one wants to hire me, so I don't want that.
The math part is one of the most critical pieces though, I think, in that step, in that journey. And to your point and to mine a little bit, you know, when the time finally came where we had this amazing year with one of our companies and my accountant came, we'd given all these bonuses out because my job was sales. It was just go out and sell and let everybody else do the work. I still remember my accountant came to me and she was like, hey, we're going to need you to take out a loan. And I was like, a loan? What are you talking about? We just did, you know, a couple million dollars. And she's like, you know, we spent that, you know? And I was like, well, how could we have spent it? She's like, look around. You were like, you know, 10 people a year ago. You're like 20 now. And I was just like, oh my God. So, you know, now with the companies that we have an investment in, I literally close my books every month and it's painful to some extent, but it's an understanding of that whole side of the coin. You know, 3G is under a lot of microscope right now because of how they do their pricing model, but spending a little bit of time with some of the CMOs within their space, Fernando Machado at the Burger King side and Eduardo Luz over at Kraft Heinz, there's a balance to understanding the fact that cost basis piece, there's some relevancy in that and you can still innovate even with that. You can't overcut, but there does have to be an understanding of the siphon. And I think for Fernando and Eduardo, knowing that gives them maybe more stability because it helps them to better understand how to balance their budgets to some
extent. I agree. I think if you look at the CMOs that have shorter tenures consistently, there's a gap in their resume experience. And the ones that have longer tenure and have the bigger opportunities is they have that kind of piece.
Because you can speak to the CEO.
Exactly. And the board.
Yeah, and the board.
Right.
And if you can't, then you're just pointing at the other guy and he's going to use, or a girl, hopefully to some extent.
Yeah.
They're going to use what they know about what you do and make decisions based on that piece of it.
Yeah, my litmus test exactly for a CMO.
What's your best advice for a CMO?
So my thing would be get yourself in a position where you could be on an earnings call or to a board talking through the numbers almost at the same level as your CFO, right? Meaning if you have that kind of comfort, you don't have to say, let me defer to my CFO. So whatever you need to be able to get a better handle and grasp of the numbers, not just at the top level, like really understand what is contributing to what, which I'm doing right now, I'm trying to learn it now, that you can have those discussions confidently without being like, oh man, I need my CFO next to me. I think there's nothing stronger than that. You're going to figure out the creative, you'll figure out even the data piece of it, but the financials, I learned the hard way, but in a good way, that is.
And now you have it. Now it's
well, I'm getting it.
You're getting it, yeah. Listen, we have a few more minutes. I promise I'll get you out of here on time for your call. Let's talk about the new role to some extent, and then I want to put a button on it to bring it back kind of full circle. But in the new position that you're going to be in, your levels of responsibility will be up and down the kind of entire marketing funnel to some extent, so both the creative and the media element of it as well. And so creative has been a big part of what you've done in PR in the past. Has media ever been part of what you've been responsible for, whether it was at Boxed or at any of your other stops along the way?
Chipotle and Boxed both, where I really oversaw all media. Chipotle was digital and Boxed was all
And so biddable and programmatic are such huge buzzy words right now because everything is really moving to that kind of a cost basis system. And if you own an agency out there and your media buying team is not proficient or does not at least have a deep understanding of how programmatic or biddable works, you are putting yourself out of business is my advice typically to those agencies that touch media, because at some point all media or most media will be bought through some type of a bidding platform. It already is tipping that way to some extent. What's your thought process on either what's happening in the biddable space or the current trend, which seems to be in-housing or outside?
So I think the consequence of biddable and programmatic is actually the second thing that you mentioned, and bringing it in-house. So I just did this Ad Age article like a year or 2 years ago, and I got blown up by a lot of my agency friends because I have 15 years of agency, and my Facebook, my LinkedIn, just I got crushed. Like, how could you say that? Because I basically said—
You threw us in the dirt, man.
I mean, I essentially did, right? I said that the role of agency people, their goal should be to aspire to go in-house. Take all that great experience across all those brands and verticals and cities and teams and all that, and then go do it. Be the decision maker. Go to be the one who implements it. Be the one who's driving the change and in front of the C-suite internally versus constantly on the outside. And I've been there. I've pitched hundreds of ideas and concepts. I always thought I knew better than the brand manager. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but it didn't matter because I didn't have that say. So I think what's happening now is more brands from small startup to large established companies are looking to bring those teams in-house. I'm not saying agencies are going away. I think agencies will play a specific kind of role. I think the retainer model is going away. And I think it's going to be more about, I don't need 25 people at 10% here. There, give me those two or three people, give them to me at 100% or 80%, have them at my offices 2-3 days a week as extension of my team, working with my team, embedded, developing the strategy and execution. And when I need overflow, then I'll go pull in other people from your team. Big Super Bowl campaign has multiple channels, omni-channel experience, global program. Yes, now I need an agency that can help me scale that. But from the get-go, give me my account executive, my strategy lead, my creative lead, whatever the thing is, and let them be my extension, my teams. Maybe I can't have the headcount to go hire all those people, but you have that right team there versus 10%, 25% of these people. And I think that larger model, though, is really about the core team is in-house, one form or another, and they're leading and driving the strategy. Whereas the Don Draper days, it was like, here's the brief. They come back and they're telling you. If you watch Mad Men, it's kind of crazy. He's telling them what they should be doing with their business, telling them about their customer. What day and age would you not know your customer better than an agency guy in that example who spends 10% of his day on your business?
Well, right? And that's still happening. You know, we sat with a client, actually Philip and I, the digital company that he works for. They were with one of the big five and they were asking questions just about their biddable campaign. They were like, can we get something a little bit deeper than this click-through report? It took them 2 weeks to send them something. I mean, that's, but I, to your point, that's sometimes where more of this in-housing is taking place because you don't have 2 weeks to answer to your CEO.
Right.
You need to answer them right now. And that's why there's such an unknowing maybe of what's happening in the space.
But I think the agencies that get it are, and you're seeing it, they're adapting, right? They're the ones who are coming out.
You have to start solving and not selling.
Yep, exactly.
That's how you make the change.
And the word true
partners. Hashtag solve, don't sell.
Right, that's right. And the word true partners is kind of a cliche, but it's like they just have to be so embedded, meaning you might walk away from other business because like, listen, I can't take this on because that means that's less time on you and I'm committed. It's like Jerry Maguire. Honestly, Jerry Maguire, I think, is a great metaphor for lots of things in life when he basically says less clients and one client, I can focus on you. And like, I do think there's something to be said for that. I get there's obviously a lot of other implications there from a financial standpoint, but I think you're going to see more and more, less and less of like 20 agencies and everyone's on retainer and so everyone's getting a car, right? Now it's like, let's really focus on what
you
we
have
need.
To bring value no matter what you're in. And if you lose sight of that, then you've lost the opportunity to be able to grow roots with those clients maybe that you have. Listen, I've only got you for 2 more minutes because I told you I'd get you in your car on time. And that's why the clock is facing me rather than you. So it's Jackson Gianagam. Uh-huh. I came up with that correctly. You're getting ready to have another baby. You're going to have two of them. You're moving to DC, a very different than New York.
Yeah.
Where do your parents live?
They live in Northern Virginia, actually.
And so you'll be maybe a little closer to them at this point.
Yep, about an hour away.
And so your dad's alive and he's been able to see all of this success that you have.
Yeah.
And how's that been? Has it been pretty rewarding?
It has. He doesn't really get it. They're immigrants who are very by the book in a lot of ways. So they think about like, why would you leave jobs every 2 years? He's been in the same job for 10 years and that is even short to him. So, and they definitely don't understand advertising and marketing. Where they came from is about being a lawyer, a doctor, a banker, a teacher. Like those are the jobs. So sometimes I just have to like, not try to explain. And he knows Clorox. He learned about Box, right? They know what Chipotle is. So that helped. Agency life was completely lost on them. But they're very proud and they're supportive, most importantly. And they just want us to be happy.
Well, maybe you'll build the next generation of marketers with these two amazing daughters that you're going to be raising.
Well, actually, my goal for one of them is president. The other one is actor. Or create a field of some
Ask
sort.
Your mom. She's going to want you to squeeze doctor in there somewhere. I'm just sure. So Jackson Gianagam, again, thank you so much for joining us on
thank
the CMO
you,
Suite. Please take us out of the show.
For hanging out in the CMO Suite. podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. UConnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to UConnex today for a free demo. UConnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.